This is a Radio Web Megafab podcast.
I think that boredom is certainly not boring. That boredom is actually very exciting. When you think about your experience in a boring performance, we've all been to, I don't mean that, you know, a Mozart concert that is badly performed. I mean a work of art that is intentionally boring. So someone is going to, you know, scratch on the microphone like this for an hour. You sit there and within the first minute you realize, oh, okay, this is going to be an hour. Do I leave now? I got the picture. I know what's going to happen. I could leave now. But if you leave now, you deny yourself the experience of boredom. So then what happens is you go through all of these mental and emotional states, including irritation, forgetfulness, you think about something else, distraction, you come back to it. You have a certain kind of militant determination to see it through to the end. Yes, I can do this. There's a kind of heroism that's involved. And on and on and on it goes. I can't give you the list of different actually visceral, physical body reactions, mental reactions, emotional, and even spiritual reactions, you know, boredom as a meditative state. I'm sure that samadhi in nirvana is actually quite boring because there's nothing happening. There is a politics to the intentionally boring performance or event, which is a kind of, becomes a kind of resistance to entertainment. I know that, for example, most major radio stations, whether they're commercial stations or state-run stations, are equipped with an alarm so that if there's more than 10 seconds of silence, suddenly the whole thing goes into a panic and the president is phoned in the middle of the night to get out of bed. It's like everyone completely freaks out because they're terrified of silence. They're actually terrified of boredom. And that, so that boredom actually has this kind of, it's a subversive expose of the charade, of the simulacrum of entertainment and the false nature of information, you know, that we're giving you some information. But, you know, boredom takes many forms. I don't have a television. So I'm in the hotel room here and I decide, oh, I'll check out the German TV and see what it looks like. And it, I mean, it's, you watch it for a while, you pass the point of boredom through the point of irritation to something else. Now, can I say that the German mainstream television is actually politically subversive? No, it's just irritating. And of course, it shows you how a boring capitalism can be. So, depends, I think, it's a relative thing. It depends on your point of view, depends on the power relationship. Who's boring who here?
Don't touch that dial, because it's time now for the HP Dinner Show, the radio program scientifically designed to help you prepare, eat, and digest your dinner. And now, here they are, live at the mics, HP.
Oh, it was very boring. The tapes are being digitized. And we recorded as well as we could every single show. So there are boxes and boxes of quarter-inch tapes, most of which had never even been played once. I mean, you perform the show, you record it, throw it in a box, and then start writing the next show, because 90 minutes a week is a lot of work. So I'm listening to these tapes. And even at the time, you know, I can remember thinking, oh, this one's not going to be a keeper, you know. And, but now you listen to all the clicks and the farts and the pauses and the bad sound levels and in particular the slow delivery. The delivery is so slow. Sometimes intentionally slow. So, you know, you heard me imitating the man from outer space. Well, Patrick was the one who used to deliver that text. And every week the man from outer space would have a different message for the beings of planet Earth. But it would take him so long to deliver the message. And actually, someone mentioned it earlier about slow radio. Actually, now it's interesting. Another thing, I'm working a lot with my archive. So one of the things we're looking at is the slow scan video. So around the 1978, so was my first experience with this business of sending a video image over the telephone line. And it would take 15 seconds for one still image to compose on the screen. And it looked like that transmission from the moon or something, you know. And then the machines improved and it was only 8 seconds, and we thought that was fantastic. And then it became a matter of making a montage to document these kinds of artworks, and one was always constrained to say, yeah, well, let's speed it up in the editing, or we'll cut here and we'll make it more, a little more action, and try to make it more like not so boring. And so that's what most people have looked at. But now it's been possible to go back to the original recordings of slow scan video, which incidentally were on sound tape on audio cassette, because it was an audio signal that went over the telephone. So this is already a kind of curious thing for people who are 25 years old. You have video on an audio cassette? Well, I like to see that. And so we actually set up the old hardware, which we still have, and said, let's see if it still works. And we put it in there. And it was amazing. It looked so incredible. I mean, it was like the mosaics of Ravenna, you know, watching these pixels formulate on the screen. And suddenly there was a crowd, and all the people in the art center came, they left their desks, and they were looking at this stuff going, oh, yeah, this is awesome. You have to project this big on the wall. This is the most exciting video that I've seen. So it's like, where is boredom, you know, in a situation like that?
On every bottle of rum, of vodka, brandy, gin, aquavit, rye, schlibovitz, ouzo, bourbon, Irish and Scotch. And if it doesn't mildly upset you, you forget about it soon enough. Praise be the spirit of the fruit.
So yeah, the HP show was born in the last days of boring art. I mean, a lot of the Fluxus performances, they went on and on and on and on. This was not our intention to be this way. Our intention was that we are broadcasting on the radio to housewives, to truck drivers, to children, to cooks working in restaurants, to ordinary people. And we don't want them to be bored. We want them to laugh. We want them to be entertained. We want them to have fun, and we want them to think. And one of the great compliments that we got from one of our listeners was that, yes, when I listen to your show, you make me laugh and think at the same time. And that was heaven. So we believed in this idea of communication. We were not going to broadcast the sound of a car engine for 20 minutes. That wasn't the thing. And it's interesting, recently, and now that I've sort of come back to this material, I was invited to a radio art symposium. And I went to the symposium, and of course, everyone at the symposium is playing back the sound of a car motor going. And they said, well, would you play some of our stuff? And I had a little bit of the HP radio show. And it was the two of us sitting at a microphone and talking. And then they said, that's not radio art. That's ordinary radio. That's regular radio. Radio art has to be, or it's not art, right? And so this kind of concrete sort of noise thing has now been accepted as that's what is radio art. I was amazed. I mean, there was a professor of radio art who gave a lecture at the symposium on how to make a soundscape. Well, first what you do is you place the microphones this way, and then maybe in the studio you can add these other layers, and all these people taking notes about how to do this. Now it becomes institutionalized and people learn this is the right way to make a soundscape and this is presumably the wrong way to do it. You know, it's like, well, whatever.
A lot of us have come to think of our radios as little icons perched up there on top of our refrigerators or under our stereos in the living room. And with good reason, because the radio is a little icon. A little physical embodiment of all that is good regarding science and technology. Yes, that's right. Now, I know when I say that radio is a symbol of all that is good, a lot of you out there will scoff.
Well, we have a schizophrenic situation now with archives. Of course, you know, the archive as the landscape or the archive as the source of art material, this has been, you know, a la mode already for 10 years or more. And you sort of feel, okay, enough with the archive. We're finished with the archive now. On the one hand, and then, of course, you see the state descending on places like Weserberg, and we see this in Canada, saying, oh yeah, we don't need the archive anymore. Let's just melt those films and throw them out. They've all been digitized. Let's close the libraries. The book is a thing of the past. Blah, blah, blah. We hear this tirade, which of course is just a repressive censorship ideology. And then, on the other hand, there's this obsession to collect everything and to reproduce everything, and nothing must be lost. So these two movements going on at the same time is a kind of schizophrenic situation.
The cavemen only worked a little bit. They worked maybe 8 hours a week, not 8 hours a day.
I don't think that any discussion of boredom and the archive would be complete without a reference to the NSA. And to their idea, the motto of the National Security Agency is collect it all. The director had this on his door, and this was into the head of every employee, 30,000 people, with the idea that every cell phone call that's made, even from a flying airplane, we must capture that. We must capture all the information in the world, all of it, all the time, and we must store it all of the time. And they've built a building, probably the largest building in the world, somewhere in Utah, which is full of these little terabyte hard drives. That the idea is to record these billions and billions of messages every day, completely obsessed with this idea. And yet, when they are asked by the Congressional Congress to say, and what have you learned from this? What terrorist attack, what bank robber have you foiled with this information? They have done nothing with this information. It's been useless. And all of the attempted attacks that have been stopped by some passerby on the street who had a sharp eye, or some detective who was doing traditional police work using technologies and methodologies that were developed 50 or 100 years ago. Those are the people who have stopped these things. That all of this obsession of the NSA has stopped nothing. It's done nothing. All it has done is fed this obsession with the archive. Is you are being archived, your every thought is being archived by somebody else in order to control you and what you buy, and here we are. It's like Orwellian situation that we have. So it's quite relevant to talk about boredom. What could be more boring than all the information in the world, especially when it's useless?
Now every one of you should search within your mind whether or not you believe in the mind theory. Open all the drawers up there within your old-fashioned skull bones that radio has written on them. Take out those files and have a deep, hard look, because it's time now to listen to the radio. It's time now to listen to the radio that's been scientifically developed to help you to prepare, eat, and digest your dinner. It's time now for the HP Dinner Show.
rwm.macba.cat